Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm DeBlaine Chakraborty.
And since doing this podcast, I've really come to love talking about some of the sketchier figures in history. And it took me a while to get there. I remember the old Marie Laveau episode and the Mad Trapper episode. They really frustrated me just because they're so obscure and you can't tell what's true. And Marie Laveau, I mean, there might have been more than one Marie Laveau. It can be kind of frustrating when you first get into it. But by the time I got to like the Emperor Norton episode or Spring-Heeled Jack last fall, I was pretty sold on the idea of these sketchy historical figures, because sometimes it's really just as interesting to learn about the life someone invents than the life that they really led.
Yeah, but while today it may be pretty easy to self-invent through the internet and new media, for example, it was kind of tricky in the early 1800s in rural England. You were probably really limited in where you could go, for one thing, who you could meet also, and what you could do.
Yeah, especially if you were a young, poor woman like Mary Wilcox, who we're going to be talking about today. She ran away from home. She worked a bunch of odd jobs. She got fired. She had a foundling hospital baby who died. She took to begging, and it all seems like a pretty dismal life path until Holy Thursday, or Good Friday, depending on what account you read, in 1817, when she wandered into the village of Almondsbury and became a princess.
Of course, at the time, nobody recognized her as Mary Wilcox. She was just a semi-exotic-looking young woman with long, dark hair, brown eyes, and very white teeth. And a turban.
Kind of set her apart.
Yeah, it kind of made her stand out a little bit in this village outside of Bristol. And she was also wearing a plain black dress and carrying all her belongings in one bundle, and she seemed to be starving and distressed.
Kind of worse for wear.
But what really made her stick out like a sore thumb is that she was speaking a language no one could understand.
Yeah, so that confused the locals, and they were thinking, okay, well, maybe she's just your standard foreign beggar. You know, some country that might be well known. Somebody in town might speak the language. So they took her to the poorhouse, and no one there could understand her either. So she was taken to the county magistrate's house, Samuel Worrell, who was also known as Devil Worrell, who had a Greek manservant who was fluent in a few different languages, but nobody there could understand her either. And Devil Worrell was kind of skeptical in the first place. He thought she might just be a beggar who had a really elaborate hoax and asked for any papers she had. She didn't have any. She just had a few small coins, including a counterfeit coin.
That was a big no-no, right?
It was a big no-no, but that was one thing that made them start thinking she might have been the real deal, because she didn't seem at all concerned by the fact that she had a counterfeit coin. It didn't seem to be a significant problem to her. So while Devil Worrell was a little bit skeptical, his American-born wife, Elizabeth, was pretty enchanted by this young woman. It was kind of an exotic addition to this sleepy town.
Yeah, so they put her up, this mystery woman, they put her up in the village's public house, and it's here where the first clue of her origin, or so-called origin, emerged. She saw a print of a pineapple on the wall and got really excited, and she identified it as Anena. So she's from some tropical locale, people are thinking now. She recognizes a pineapple and is calling it by name.
Some symbol of home.
And that night at the lodging house, she acted even stranger. She didn't eat, but she drank tea and performed a prayer over every cup. She didn't seem to recognize the purpose of a bed either.
Yeah, I think the landlady's daughter had to demonstrate to her, look how comfortable the bed is. You can sleep here instead of on the floor. But the next day, Mrs. Worrell comes by the lodging house, picks her up, brings her back to Knoll Park, which is the estate where they live, and started to investigate the girl's origins by going through books that the couple owned. And the mystery woman seemed especially drawn to pictures of China in books, and also to the Chinese furniture and little Chinese knickknacks that the Worrells had in their home. So it seemed like maybe she had some kind of Asian connection. She also identified herself as Caribou. So we have a name now, too, to put on this mystery woman. But she was still behaving really strangely, and she wasn't really eating, and nobody could understand her. So after a few days, she was finally presented to the Portuguese sailor Manuel Inesso. And this was really the first big break in who this woman might be.
Yeah, he said he could understand her language, and he told the following story. Her name is Caribou, and she's a princess from an island called Javasu in the East Indies. She'd been stolen by pirates and had escaped to the Bristol Channel.
Okay, so the Worrells are pretty impressed by that story. That sounds incredibly romantic, and we're, of course, right in the thick of the romantic era right now, too. So they were into it. They invited friends over. They wanted people to see this woman, and educated friends, too, who might be able to piece together more information about her background. So Caribou spent the summer at Knoll Park entertaining her hosts, and she really seems to have had a pretty good time. And when we discuss the real woman's actual background, some of this is going to add up a little bit. But she was very good at fencing and at archery. She made her own bow and arrow, actually. She would dance and carry around a gong, which she would play sometimes. She'd also pray from the treetops.
She also swam naked in the lake and cooked a chicken curry.
Yeah, so good stuff for a guest to do.
Multi-talented. And she also met with the Worrells' learned guests, who extracted even more of her story from her and had her copy out examples of her writing. And finally, a Dr. Wilkinson from Bath even examined her head and found that there were strange incisions there that could only have been the work of Oriental surgeons, is how he put it. He also helped identify her language as Rejang from Sumatra.
Yeah, so word of this exotic princess obviously got out. There are all these guests coming over. And the Worrells certainly are trying to promote this woman staying with them. And so when the news finally makes it into the national papers, they hear from somebody. And it's not good news. It's not somebody confirming her story. It's a Mrs. Neal from Bristol who said she knows exactly who this Princess Caribou is. She's Mary Wilcox, who is the daughter of a cobbler from the village of Witheridge. And Mrs. Neal says that the woman has stayed in her lodging house before and would even entertain her with this made-up gibberish language. And whenever she would leave the house, she'd go out in a turban. So it seems pretty likely it's the same lady.
Yeah, and Caribou finally confessed, yes, it is true. The news went crazy over this confession. They were actually kind of impressed by the fact that it was such an elaborate fraud and an embarrassment for the middle class.
Yeah, it was kind of, it put the Worrells in a bad place, and all of these so-called experts who had been chatting away with Princess Caribou and trying to decipher her culture. But now that we know she's really Mary Wilcox, what's this lady's story? Why did she start this elaborate ruse in the first place? And where did she pick up the skills that made it so convincing? I think if I was trying to pretend to speak a foreign language, I wouldn't be able to do it for more than an hour or so.
Yeah, or pretend not to understand English.
I think that would be even harder. So Mary Wilcox was baptized November 23rd, 1791, right in England. According to her father, a bout of rheumatic fever had left her a little off in the head from a pretty young age.
Yeah, but she had been an active kid. She worked. She was kind of a tomboy. And at 19, she ended up leaving home. By the time she got to London, she was actually really sick and had a fire cupping therapy done at a poorhouse hospital. And that's where those weird scars that Dr. Wilkinson had found came from. She picked up some knowledge of Hebrew and Jewish customs when she worked as a nursemaid for a family who lived next door to a Jewish household. And she also used that opportunity to practice storytelling to the kids. So that's kind of where she picked up some of her skills in that department.
Yeah, and from there, she lived for a time at a Magdalen hospital for reformed women, so a prostitute's home, a reformed prostitute's home. But she was kicked out when it was discovered that she hadn't, in fact, been a prostitute. I read in a review of one of the more recent books on Princess Caribou, a lot of the information comes from an old narrative by John Matthew Gooch. But in a newer account, it's suggested, well, somebody who lied this much, maybe we shouldn't entirely believe some of these details about her life. Maybe she was kicked out of the Magdalen home for other reasons, not because she was too pure to be living there.
Yes, well, regardless of what happened there, we know that after that, she may have spent some time in France, and by February 1816, she had a baby, which was identified first as the child of Exeter bricklayer John Edward Baker, and later as the child of a Frenchman that she had supposedly met in a bookshop. So another really sketchy up-in-the-air detail. But by late in the year, the baby had unfortunately died at the Foundling Hospital, and Mary ultimately ended up back in Devon, where she told her parents that she was off to Philadelphia.
Yeah, she took her time getting to Bristol, though, which is where she would have sailed to America. And she was begging along the way, you know, just sort of working her way up the road begging and hanging out with gypsies, too, which is certainly where she picked up some of her modes of dress and some of her customs that were so convincing to the people she ended up with. But finally, in Bristol, she decided she'd get her ticket to Philadelphia, and she set about raising the money she needed for the passage. But she noticed while she was begging and trying to raise the money that the Breton girls, who were also begging in their traditional lace headdresses, were doing a lot better and they were getting a lot more money. And she decided that she wanted to figure out a way to put herself apart too. So she designed a turban, something Mrs. Neal later remembered, and pretended to be French. And again, with the lying, she would sort of change her identity. If she ran into somebody who actually spoke French, then she would be Spanish and vice versa. Just sort of playing her game the best she could and eventually making her way up to Almondsbury where she has her dramatic evolution into Princess Caribou.
Yeah, so ultimately the key to her success seemed to be the fact that she actually knew a few languages and she could understand, speak, and imitate them, and also her ability to convincingly not understand English at all.
Yeah, that ability to feign ignorance of her native language really did help, because after experts started hanging around and they honestly believed that she could not understand them, they would discuss things they had seen and quiz her, and she could pick up on what they were saying and the books that they were showing her and sort of do what was expected of her, follow the customs that they thought a princess from this part of the world might actually do.
So a really good memory came into play there, too.
Yeah, she definitely had a good memory. But after her discovery, after her outing, Mrs. Worrell did spring for a ticket to America. Mrs. Worrell seems like a pretty nice lady.
I know, that's really generous. And when she got there, Mary was met by crowds at the dock, but her attempt to perform as Princess Caribou with a showman actually didn't go so well. So she ended up coming back to London in 1824 to try the same exact act, but also with very little success.
Which, I mean, I'd guess the Princess Caribou, if she was still doing her archery and her gong dances and stuff, I don't know, maybe the show just wasn't as impressive as the real deal. But by 1828, she was back in Bristol and married. And so what is this former princess, this imposter, going to do with the next 30 years of her life if she can't tour as Princess Caribou? Get into the leech business.
Yeah, she sold leeches to the Bristol Infirmary and was pretty good at it, too. She was really successful. And then she had her new little family and tried to play down her whole Princess Caribou past and lived a long, happy life until 1864.
Yeah, and I'm a little curious about what selling leeches really entails in the first place. I'm going to have to do some more research on that because, well, I don't know, or maybe not. It's kind of gross. I might not want to
think about that anymore. Carefully. Maybe you could just ask someone to write in about the leech business.
Yeah, maybe if you have firsthand knowledge of the leech selling business, let us know.
And let us know how you know, because we're really curious to know why you know that.
Definitely. But I mean, I think this is an interesting story. Again, these sort of sketchy people who reinvent their lives, or it's just interesting to weigh the combination of factors that are probably involved, possibly a little mental illness, or as her father said, some kind of effects from her rheumatic fever as a youth. Possibly,
but she seemed way too smart, too.
She did seem really smart and had a lot of initiative to sort of make herself into something she couldn't be. But of course, she also seems like a compulsive liar, and there's a huge element of fraud and betrayal behind it, because she did betray people who were quite kind to her. It's just, there's so much going on. I think it's a strange story. I've never seen the movie. I think I might have to.
I haven't seen it either.
Look it up now. I vaguely remember the title kind of fascinating me as a little kid because it had a princess with a crown on the cover. In the movie story now, do you ever have like the covers that you can remember?
Yeah, I do, but I usually watch the movies.
Yeah.
I never
saw the movie, but maybe someday. You could also let us know if it's actually worth my renting it.
Yeah, so you could write to us. We're at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, or you can look us up on Twitter at Mist in History or on Facebook.
Yeah, and that brings us to listener mail. So this email is from Dave, and I thought it was completely appropriate for this podcast because it's about a made-up language. If only only Princess Caribou had convinced a bunch of other people to speak her language, she might have had a case here. But Dave wrote in, "Hi, ladies. I absolutely love the podcast. I've been a listener for years, but first-time emailer. Have you ever considered doing an episode on Esperanto? It's a, quote, constructed language created in 1887 by a Polish man named L.L. Zamenhof with an incredible history. Meant as a culture-neutral international language, it's the only such language that actually gained a lasting following, which still exists today. Esperantists were targets of the Nazis and Soviets, and many were killed in World War II. Zamenhof was Jewish. It has a very rich literature, including many, many books originally written in Esperanto. Both the life of Zamenhof and the resulting Esperanto movement is just endlessly fascinating. Unfortunately, when it is mentioned in the media, it is usually dismissed as somehow like Klingon." So this is pretty interesting. I'm curious to look into it. I just learned one of our coworkers knows a little bit about Esperanto, so we might have to consult with him.
Yeah, and find out a little bit more about it. I disagree with you, though. I don't think Princess Caribou would be into this. Too many people.
Yeah, she was concerned about her true identity being exposed. I don't know if she wanted to have followers.
Yeah, she would have wanted something, I think, that nobody else could catch on to. She was a little bit of a fibber. So, and speaking of fibs, we have an article on our website called How Lying Works. So if you want to dissect that topic a little more and find out maybe how Princess Caribou was able to use it to her advantage, you can look it up on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.